The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
All right, you know what? Let me just start. Okay. So, just to make sure. Okay. So, today is April 6th, 2011. This is the criminal law advising session. I'm going to talk for just a few minutes, doesn't take that long, and address your questions. You're all 1Ls, and I assume that most people who will be listening to the recording will also be 1Ls. You can have a wonderfully rich and rewarding life as a criminal lawyer, or as a person with a specialty in criminal law. Whether you are a practicing lawyer, prosecutor, or defender, you are a judge, you're elsewhere in the system working for the probation or parole department, doing something with sentencing at the Sentencing Commission, working for a legislature on a criminal law committee or subcommittee. There are always going to be jobs, unlike so many other areas today. There are always going to be jobs. As long as there's crime, there are always going to be criminal law jobs, and nobody is suggesting that we're doing away with crime. That is just not in our future. So what I'd like to talk about is the curriculum we have, and if I were in your shoes, things you need to be thinking about regarding not just next semester, but the next 2 years, or if any of you are part-time, the next 3 years, or if any of you are in a joint degree program, the next 2.5 years, or whatever. Probably the single, excuse me.
I'm dropping off some criminal law externship.
Great.
Things.
Okay.
Give out.
Thank you. Don't need this many, but thank you. Single most important thing to know is that besides criminal procedure, or what we call criminal procedure one, which is a required course for you, the rest of the schedule for people interested in criminal law is elective. Now, you'll have to take ethics second semester next year, and you'll have to take crim pro first semester, unless you take crim pro over the summer, which is a possibility. Nothing else is required. The only real question is, what other courses should you take? What other courses might you want to consider? And what sort of sequencing of these courses is really important. So let me talk about the sequencing question. And there's not a lot to write down on this, because by and large what I'm going to say to you is we don't have sequencing. If we thought that sequencing was important for the criminal law curriculum, we would have said this is a prerequisite, or consider taking things in the following order. You'll take Crim Pro next semester. You'll take ethics second semester. And if you know you're interested in criminal law, just in terms of sequencing, you want to take evidence sometime next year. Why? Because you'll probably, at this point next year, if you're still interested in criminal law, want to do a clinic, or want to do criminal trial practice in the fall semester of your third year. Both of them say, both the clinic and criminal trial practice, say that you can take evidence as a prerequisite or a co-requisite. And that's a really dumb rule. It seems to me it makes so much more sense to have evidence before you start the course than to be taking it simultaneously. If you're in a clinic, for example, and you're interviewing a client, you may not even know what's relevant in that interview because you haven't gotten to that topic yet in evidence. It makes so much more sense to get evidence out of the way. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to take evidence next semester. Because criminal trial practice is always a fall semester course, so you wouldn't take it next semester. And the criminal clinic really is for third-year students, whether defense or prosecution or a full year with both defense and prosecution, that's third year. So my suggestion is to take evidence sometime next year, doesn't matter which semester, or in the summer. We offer it both summers as well. There will be people who know so much in their bones, feel in their bones that they want to be criminal litigators, that they will take both criminal procedure and evidence this summer so that they could hit the ground running with externships next semester or criminal trial practice next semester as first semester, second year students. Beyond that, the only, in my opinion, essential course, not category courses, but the only essential course to consider is Crim Pro 2, Criminal Procedure 2, which is always a spring semester course. Let me just confirm that. Yeah, it's always a spring semester course. So Criminal Procedure 1, which you'll take next semester, is constitutional criminal law, basically Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment. And depending on where the professor starts, you may not get all of those amendments. Fourth Amendment law is overwhelming. You get 10 Fourth Amendment cases or so from the Supreme Court every year. It's always moving. It's always jumping around. So if a professor starts the course with Fourth Amendment, you'll never get to Fifth and Sixth. If the professor starts the course with Fifth, a week on Fifth, a week on Sixth, then you'll have the rest of the semester on Fourth. But it's all constitutional criminal procedure, pretrial and trial. Criminal Procedure 2, not required, is non-constitutional criminal procedure. Some people call it the bail to jail course. You learn about the law of bail. You learn about the law of sentencing. You learn some aspects of incarceration, whether jail pre-conviction or prison post-conviction, but it's not constitutional. Now, some people call it bail to jail. Others call it bail to freedom. Okay. But it's all non-constitutional criminal procedure. And it seems to me if you want to practice criminal law, you have to have that one as well. And in terms of sequencing, it's always a spring semester course, so it would make sense. Crim Pro 1, first semester. Crim Pro 2, second semester. It's taught, we only have one set of teachers, and it's in one course. It's a husband-wife tag team who teach that course. Gary Baer, who used to be a prosecutor in Maryland and now is a private defender, so he gives the litigation part. And his wife, Mary Ellen Barbera, is a judge on Maryland's highest court. So you get the prosecution, defense, lawyer strategy part of it, and you get the judge's perspective as well, and it works really well. They've been doing this for a long time. Beyond that, I mean, there are a lot of courses that you can consider, but none of them are necessary. And should you overload on criminal courses? If you know now that you really want to do crim law, keep in mind that your decision may change. Your perspectives may change. You take another course that really turns you on to something, or you have an externship in a different area, it turns you on to that. So just allow for the possibility that your interests may change, so you don't want to be marked as a criminal law person on your resume and on your transcript should you apply for a, God forbid, a law firm job. and I think I'm preaching to the choir, because that's how I felt in law school. I mean, I did my interviewing for law firm jobs only because I needed money, hoping that I wouldn't get one. and my hope came to pass. And I did. It seems to me if you're here, it means you don't want a law firm job, and that's perfectly fine. But your feelings may change, so allow for the possibility that you are. Along the same lines, you really don't want to take only criminal or criminal-related courses. Basically, before you can be a criminal lawyer, you really want to be a lawyer. You want to be a well-rounded lawyer. What sorts of courses are important for well-rounded lawyers to take? And most of my colleagues would agree, because, you know, We give advising sessions in different groups every year, general and specific. There are three courses here that we call the non-required courses. Why do we call them that? Because 95% of the students take all three of them. That's evidence, which should be required. Business associations. And you may not like to hear me say this, federal personal income tax. Yeah, you may have a mental block against that. I had to take it in law school. It was required. I had to take legal accounting because it was required. I'm sorry I took legal accounting. I had to take business associations, and I'm sort of sorry I took it only because I had a lousy teacher. But federal personal income tax, I had a great teacher, and it was a wonderful course just to be a lawyer in the United States. The federal personal income tax is not how to fill out your tax return. It's a statutory course, more statutory than anything that you're seeing this year, probably anything you'll see in the rest of law school. But when the course is taught well, and we do have good tax teachers, it's more of a social welfare course than any other course. It's basically a gigantic statute that creates incentives and disincentives in our society. To the extent that we give money through the tax system to education or to social services, things that are part of the foundation of how we look at the criminal justice system. So at some point, I'd say take BA tax, personal tax, not corporate, and definitely evidence. Evidence next year, the others, whenever you want. But let's go beyond that. I printed out the schedule for next semester, and I've noted the criminal law and criminal law related courses here. I would not recommend taking more than two criminal law or criminal law related courses a semester, because you want to be well-rounded and you want to allow for the possibility of doing other things. You may end up, if you're doing defense, not being in a criminal defense law firm, but in a general firm doing some or mostly criminal, but other things as well. And what other things do you face in a general firm? Well, you face a lot of torts, a lot of contracts, little property. So you might need to know some things about that. But let me just list for you the course that I consider to be criminal-related courses for next semester. So we've got CrimPro 1, just going through the list here, evidence, family law. Family law is big. I mean, you can't be a criminal lawyer without knowing family law. Especially in state court, not so much federal, but in state court, when you're dealing with street crime and its effect on families, both for the victim and for the defendant. Family law, I would say, is not a criminal course, but it's a criminal law-related course. Domestic violence is right up there. A really important course to take, but probably in your third year, or at least not next semester. And in any event, you won't get it anyway because Professor Vladek teaches it, and it will close out with three L's only. Federal courts. Federal courts is really important for people who do crim law, even if you do crim law in the state, because let's say you're on the defender side and your client is convicted, and you take appeals through the state system, and you want to get into the realm of post-conviction remedies, basically known as habeas corpus. That's federal. That's in the federal court. And what the federal courts class is all about is suing the government for violation of constitutional rights, whether to get your prisoner, to get your client out if the client has been convicted or sentenced unconstitutionally, or to get the client better conditions while in prison. I don't know if you've seen this in con law yet, but this is the Civil Rights Act, 42 U.S. Code, Section 1983. And basically, the federal courts class is like a combination of 1983 for conditions and Section 2254 for habeas corpus, plus other things. So if by your third year, or a year from now, you know you really want to continue to pursue crim law, federal courts is a must. Okay, it's offered every semester. Family law, I think, is also offered every semester. Most of the courses you would want, not so much the seminars, but the basic courses, are offered every semester. Okay, next page. Criminal trial advocacy is a good forensic course. You argue on your feet. You're making opening arguments, closing arguments, direct examination, cross-examination. Every one of our trial advocacy courses, criminal first semester, civil second semester, is team-taught by a practicing lawyer, usually in Maryland, a practicing lawyer and a sitting judge, every one of the criminal trial courses. The difference between that and the clinic is that the criminal trial advocacy course is a simulation. They give you the problem. They've been through the problem before. They know exactly what you should learn from those problems. Whereas in a clinic, you're dealing with live clients. And the issues and the experience for each student will be different. And harder for the professor to control, and certainly more time intensive. If you know you want to be a criminal litigator, then probably you take both of those in your third year, criminal trial advocacy. A lot of students know are interested in criminal litigation, but more generally, they're interested in litigation. They want to be in the courtroom. They know they're going to be good on their feet in the courtroom. So they take the criminal trial advocacy course in the fall semester and the civil trial advocacy in the spring semester. They also take, and you should consider taking, probably in your third year, appellate advocacy. Because, especially if you're interested in the defense side, recognize it is a fact of life. You're not going to win all your cases. You will be taking appeals. So in the appellate advocacy class, basically you're going to spend part of the semester writing a brief, taking it through a couple of drafts, and then going through an oral argument just as you're doing with legal rhetoric. Is it just a criminal case? No, not necessarily. It could be criminal or civil. But you need to learn more about doing appeals if you're interested in crim. Okay. Just out of curiosity, how many of you are interested in prosecution? Defense? Okay, good. You need to find, well, where do I put myself? I do post-conviction, which is cleaning up the messes that defense lawyers make. Yeah, so there are three sides here. Okay, just going down the list. Here's one I highly recommend, maybe even for next semester if it doesn't close out first. Advanced Criminal Procedure Plea Bargaining. It's called Advanced Criminal Procedure, but you don't have to have criminal procedure first. This is Professor Jenny Roberts, who is only in her second year with us here. Second or third? I think second. She taught this once before. It's a wonderful course. It might be one of the top five criminal law-related seminars that we offer. She offers it only once a semester. So if you were to take two criminal courses next semester, you know, maybe there would be Crim Pro and this seminar. She limits it to, well, it doesn't say here, but I think she limits it to 16 or 20. And it may well fill up before you even register. Wrongful convictions. Really important course for prosecution or defense. Prosecutors don't want you to wrongfully convict. Defenders, you need to know how to undo it to the extent possible. They've got all the power. You need to know the law. You need to hold their feet to the fire. Law and poverty is a possibility, but not next year. You know, this is sort of a backfilling course to learn about the backgrounds that create the criminal culture that we have. It's a related course. It's certainly not an essential course. Seminar on white-collar crime is probably one of our most popular criminal law seminars. You won't get into it next semester. How do I know? Well, we're only halfway through registering for the 3Ls, and that course is already closed. Typically, that's the one course that goes the quickest. It's taught by this guy Sklamberg. Excellent evaluations. Occasionally, it's taught by, I forget the other guy's name, but also excellent evaluations. Put that down as a possibility for third year, but you won't get in. Even if you're on the waiting list, you won't get in for next year. Okay, appellate advocacy, I've mentioned. International criminal law with Kittredge. If you're interested in international and criminal law, this is a nice way to combine it. If you're interested in international criminal law, you might consider doing the summer abroad program at The Hague. Are you doing that?
Yeah,
which is 4 weeks at The Hague studying international criminal law, terrorism, the role of the ICC, the International Criminal Court. That's a possibility. Professor Davis, Angela Davis, who used to be the director of the D.C. Public Defender Service, one of our tenured faculty, is on sabbatical this year, but she's coming back next year, and in the fall semester she's teaching criminal defense theory and practice. An excellent course. Students love it. Note, however, that enrollment is by permission of the instructor. You will have to write a letter explaining why you want to be in the course. And maybe I shouldn't say this, but I feel an obligation to. If you say you want to be a prosecutor, she won't let you in. Okay? As former director of D.C. Public Defender Service, when she was there, she wouldn't even interview people for a public defender job if their resume or transcript showed any interest at any time in prosecution. And there are a fair number of defense services organizations that will just exclude you. They won't even invite you in for an interview. That's a pretty strict approach. I think it's kind of, Well, I'm being taped, so I'll say short-sighted. It seems to me that any organization, criminal or otherwise, wants good people, smart people with good judgment, and I think it's an advantage to know how the other side thinks. So, you know, even if you're interested in prosecution, I would try to get into that one. I'm not saying be unethical and say you've always been interested in defense law, but you know, that's one of the filters she will use. Here's a course called Role of the Federal Prosecutor, which is offered by two lawyers at the Justice Department. Basically, what they do is take four or five people from each of the local law schools, and they hold class once a week down at the Justice Department. Very popular course, hard to get into. You won't get in second year. You might consider trying to get in third year. What's the difference between federal prosecution or defense, state prosecution, defense? It's really the sort of cases that you get. What you're learning in criminal law now, really doesn't matter which teacher you have, is for the most part state criminal law. You see very few federal cases in your first year criminal law casebooks. So you're talking for state law, rape, robbery, homicide, burglary, larceny, and a lot of things like that. If you're doing any conspiracy in your criminal law class, that mostly is federal. But when you're looking at what federal criminal lawyers do, prosecution, defense, it brings in a lot of commercial crime, whether it's corporate crime or banking crime or things like that. That's why I say even if you're interested in crim, you need to know some non-crim things or things that you may think are not criminal, like business associations, really should be part and parcel of the background of a criminal lawyer, prosecutor, or defense. Now you also get into racketeering and other things when you're in federal court, not so much in state court. And here is a seminar, Adjunct Professor Gross, Civil Rights and Remedies. I don't know the extent to which that will get into criminal issues, but a lot of the civil rights issues are the same as prisoners' rights issues. Okay. Now that's what's offered next semester. Obviously, this is just one semester in a year-long program. Let me list some other things that, actually I didn't even mention my own course, Advanced Criminal Law Seminar, which basically, at least when I'm offering it next semester, is scholarly writing in criminal law for publication. So this really is for people who have written a paper for another course in criminal law and want it, or criminal law procedure, or whatever, and want to take it through two or three drafts in one semester, and at the end of the semester submit it for publication. That's something to think about. Probably not so much for second year, usually for third year. I mean, I get to pick the students, only because I need to know whether the papers they've written on are ones within my areas of expertise so that I can give appropriate guidance. I think it's limited to 10, and I have so far approved 7 people. So it's not likely to get it, but I don't see why you'd want it next year. Probably the year after. Professor Jones, who's going to be on leave next year. Do any of you have Professor Jones now?
I do. Okay.
Jones is wonderful. I don't know what you think, but I think she's wonderful. She's a former student of mine as well. She teaches a seminar called Race, Crime, and Politics. I think that's an essential course, especially for state prosecutors and defenders, not so much for federal. I mentioned White Collar Crime, Innocence Project. Well, the Innocence Project goes hand in hand with wrongful conviction, so it's possible to do Innocence Project for credit. From time to time, Professor Kittry teaches a course called Political Crime and Terrorism. We have a lot of terrorism-related courses here, but they're not taught by the criminal faculty. Professor Marcus, who teaches constitutional law, also teaches something called national security law. Professor Vladek teaches something called Issues in National Security or something like that. And you might not know that those are criminal courses, but truly are. In my opinion, a course that most people with an interest in criminal law ought to think about is immigration. It's hard to do criminal law, especially at the state level, without having to know and get involved in immigration issues, so much so that those of us who practice criminal law and the people who do immigration law have now used a combined term. We just call it crimmigration, because you've got to know both of them. The immigration consequences of a criminal conviction are enormous. And if you, as a criminal lawyer, especially on the defense side, advising your client, yes, it's okay to plead guilty, without recognizing that pleading guilty to this offense subjects your client to deportation, it may well be actionable malpractice. And the next step may be for the client to sue you for violating his or her civil rights, or go up on appeal on the ground that my defense lawyer violated the Sixth Amendment, basically gave me incompetent representation. So probably more so than anything else, evidence clearly related, crim pro 2 essential. I'd say just on the list of things to take, immigration is way up there. And I don't think we offer it every semester. We offer it once a year, but definitely way up there. Federal courts, I mentioned, family law, human rights courses generally, externships, relevant externships. So here, Professor Saunders, who came in a little while ago, left these handouts. But I'm going to say something about this, and I'm glad she's not here because she wouldn't appreciate me saying it. However you feel about the externships and how much time they take, I think you should, in your second year, take foundational courses, take bread and butter courses, and then build on them in the third year. If you're going to do a clinic with live clients, whether the client is the state or the client is an individual, I think the need for an externship is less important, because a clinic is an externship where you're actually doing the stuff, and in fact, not just learning about it, but practicing it. So maybe you consider it for a summer, or maybe in your third year, but in your second year, it seems to me, concentrate on basic courses in criminal law and not in criminal law, and get the requirements out of the way. Keep in mind, there's another requirement. It's not the requirements to graduate. After your first year, you need 57 credits, assuming you're full-time. You all full-time? Okay. You need 57 credits. So that means, on average, three semesters of 14 credits, one semester of 15. So the requirements will be criminal procedure and ethics, plus the upper-class writing requirement. You have to take that. Doesn't matter when you take it, but you have to take it. Even if you have more than the 86 credits required for graduation, if you don't pass that core or that requirement, you can't graduate. So my advice on that, and I'll bring it back and relate it to crim law in a bit, don't leave it for your last semester. Because if for some reason you can't finish it in the last semester, whether for health reasons or family reasons, family hardship, as you're getting close to the end of your third year, if you don't finish that paper, you don't graduate. So take it any time other than second semester or third year. Now, that ties in with my next thought. We have a lot of seminars. We have more criminal law related seminars than we have criminal law non-seminar classroom courses. So what's the difference between a seminar and a non-seminar classroom course? The purpose of seminars really is twofold. Limit the number of students, 12, 16, 20, whatever, and have the students write papers instead of take a final exam. That's a real value of being in a seminar. It is critical supervision or critical comments on several drafts of a paper. That is one of the key ways to satisfy the upper class writing requirement. Almost all of our seminars do satisfy. The requirements for or the standards for the upper class writing requirement, you have to write a paper or research paper, original research paper, of at least 30 pages. Okay, not so hard to do unless you majored in undergrad in one of the hard sciences where you just never wrote essay exams. Okay, and those students find it hard to actually write paragraphs that total 20, 30 pages. So you have to write a paper of at least 30 pages. It's got to, you have to get at least the grade of C. Okay, it's impossible at this law school to not get the grade of C. You have to work affirmatively hard to not get a C. We have so much grade inflation. People used to, you need at least a C average to flunk out of this law school. Believe it or not, we used to actually have people flunk out of law school. I can't remember. remember the last time a student had less than a C average. So is it easy to satisfy the grade of C on one of these papers? Absolutely, because you have to do it under the supervision of a faculty member. So the faculty member is not going to let you, and you have to submit drafts. So the faculty member is not going to let you get away with C work. We want you to do A work. And the final aspect, the most subjective aspect of the upper class writing requirement, is that you have to write a paper of publishable quality. Okay, what does that mean? Nobody knows. You've read law review articles, or things that are published of publishable quality. Sometimes, not always, but you have to satisfy that. So you can satisfy that writing requirement through a seminar or through a journal. Those are the typical ways, or through independent research with a faculty member. But the typical way is a seminar. Now, a lot of students think, okay, even if I'm not on journal, I have to take a seminar to satisfy the writing requirement. Well, generally, that's how students do it. And then they think, okay, I've taken my seminar, so no more seminars. Hi, this is the Crim Law Advising Session.
Yes.
Come on in. Come on in.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. We've covered a lot of ground, and it will be recorded and in Dean Jaffe's office afterwards, but please sit. Are you a 1L?
I am.
Okay. So students think they have to satisfy the upper class writing. They'll take a seminar, and that's it. What students don't realize is that they can take as many seminars as they want before they graduate. To the extent that, in my opinion, the legal education you get here suffers from anything, and it's not just our school, it's most schools, is that we don't give you enough writing to do. The craft of lawyers is writing. The more writing you do, not only the better you'll get at it, but the better thinker you'll be from having to train your mind to think slowly and methodically. So it seems to me students should take a seminar every semester, whether it's in the CRIM area or not, a seminar every semester, and have one of them satisfy the upper class writing requirement. Okay. What else do you have? And I'll take any questions you have, but let me just go through what I've got here. Seminar, okay. You are allowed to take, I'm the director of the joint degree program with the School of Public Affairs on the main campus, their Department of Justice, Law, and Society. So it's possible to graduate, to get the JD and an MS in Justice, Law, and Society in 3.5 years. And even if you hadn't heard about that before now, you haven't prejudiced yourself, because you would not have taken any of the main campus courses during your first year of law school anyway. You might start them this summer or next fall semester. I'm mentioning that not because I'm trying to encourage you to be interested in that or to pursue it, but that most students don't realize that as part of the 86 credits that you must take to graduate, you are allowed to take, even if you're not in any dual degree program, you are allowed to take up to 6 credits of courses from the main campus. So the requirement is that those 6 credits have to be graduate level. And if you're interested in taking courses there in the criminal law area, somebody on the faculty has to certify to the registrar that those courses are important to your area of study. And we don't offer similar courses here at the law school. And it turns out that the registrar comes to me because I'm the point person on that. So she has come to me at some points and said, there's a course that a student wants to take and get credit for on the main campus in drug policy. Will you authorize it? Absolutely. Or there's a course on, deviant behavior. Would you authorize it? Absolutely. I have even authorized for students who are interested in practicing criminal law in California, Texas, Southern Florida, New York City, I'll authorize a graduate course in Spanish because that's important to criminal prosecution and defense. So you can take up to 6 credits, which basically means 2 courses. They have to be graduate level. I have to approve it, and I can't remember the last time I didn't approve one. I don't know if it's an upside or a downside. You'll get the credit, but the grade won't count in your grade point. So it's almost like pass-fail. That's probably an upside. It'll appear on your transcript, but it'll probably say pass or from another division of the university, no grade entered. It won't count to the grade point average. Okay. So that, most people don't know that. They think if you want to take a course from another division of the university, you have to be in one of the programs. That's absolutely untrue. Okay, so I've mentioned non-criminal courses to take. I guess another non-criminal course to take would be, or to consider taking, First Amendment. A lot of First Amendment law is criminal. You know, people arrested for disorderly conduct, for giving the middle finger to a police officer. Now, that's First Amendment, but it's criminal law. They play a role. Other courses that I've mentioned that are criminal-related but are not pure criminal law doctrine, juvenile law, family law, civil rights and remedies, absolutely immigration law, really important. But again, to be a good criminal lawyer, you first have to be a good lawyer. So you should take commercial lawyers. I'm going to say I'm doing an advising session with other faculty for my own section on Friday, Section 2. And one of the things I'm going to say is people interested in criminal law should take the following non-crim courses. People interested in non-crim should take crim courses, because if you're going to be a lawyer, if you're going to be a citizen of the United States, you need to know some of the important issues of the day. Or another way of saying it is people interested in business institutions should take some people courses. And people like you who are interested in people should take some of the relevant institution courses as well. So, for example, I'd say take a UCC course at some time. Now, you've had some UCC in contracts. I don't know how much, depends on your teacher, but probably you would have, if you got anything, you would have gotten Article 2 sales. The Article 9 secure transactions course is a possibility. A lot of students take that. Professor Hughes is very popular. But I suppose for people interested in criminal law, Article 8, negotiable instruments, is more important. What was negotiable instruments? Well, the banking law. Now, how does a check pass through the system? If you're defending someone on larceny grounds or check kiting, you really need to know that kind of law. So one theme that I'm trying to draw in this session today is a lot of things you don't think are criminal courses or criminal related really are when you just unpeel it to one or two layers below the surface. And I think finally, well, almost finally, as criminal lawyers, prosecution or defense, basically as litigators, and almost always you're going to have a jury trial, you're going to have to tell stories. Your life is going to revolve around telling stories. You need to be a well-read person, not just, okay, I know all the criminal law doctrine better than anybody else in my class. That's not enough. You just have to be a well-rounded person. One of the best criminal lawyers in the country, who's now retired from our faculty, Mike Tiger, clearly an atheist, represented one of the people convicted in the Oklahoma City bombings from 1995. He said what he would read from time to time is the Bible. And he was an atheist. Why would he read it? Because you have to resonate with the jurors. You have to tell stories that they will identify with. And he ended up winning that case, winning in the sense that his client didn't get the death penalty, whereas the other person's client did get the death penalty. In jury selection, he knew that there was one woman who was extremely religious. And through direct examination, cross-examination, opening statement and closing statement, he was playing the whole case to one juror, knowing that if he got her, then his client wouldn't be convicted. So you just have to be a well-rounded person. Don't focus exclusively on criminal courses. At least in your second year, don't take, in my opinion, two criminal courses each semester. Your interest may change. You might want to look for a civil law firm job or an agency job, and if they see too much criminal too early, you're a marked person. A year from now, if you've taken one or two crim courses or seminars each semester, a year from now, if you know you still want to pursue it, then third year, just jump in. You know, take three or four out of five courses each semester in the criminal area. That's fine, but don't do it too soon. take other things as well. Okay, one more point. Now, here I am talking about courses and sequencing and things like that. Probably the most important thing when all is said and done, follow the professor. Take courses because you like the professor, because you can identify with the professor's worldview, or you want to see a professor, a particular person you may have had, as a role model, and you want to know how that professor thinks, not just in this area, but in other areas as well. You look, for example, at Professor Vladek, who is a young rock star. Take a course with Vladek. Take a course with Jones. Take a course with Davis. Professor Amanda Frost also teaches federal courts. She's outstanding. Take a course with her. You can learn a lot from these people, not just the doctrine, but just ways to be a lawyer in this particular area of the law. Fascinating. Not a day goes by that is uninteresting for criminal lawyers. We've got a lot of graduates, both prosecution, defense, and judges, who love their jobs. Can you get burned out doing it? Sure. Hopefully it won't happen, but sure. I sort of have the best of all possible worlds. And I practice little criminal law, and I teach little criminal law, and when I get tired of practicing, I stop. When I get tired of teaching, I take a sabbatical. So I'll be on sabbatical second semester next year only because it's my turn, and I don't want to lose that. But I'll still be here doing other things. I'm not going to take a semester in practice. Okay, so I've talked for longer than I thought I would. Let me take your questions.
I have a question. Besides these courses, are there any other extracurricular activities we should consider?
Well, that's a good question. Not really. If you're going to be on a journal, you might want to write on a criminal law topic, and you could do that on almost all the journals. Even Business Law Review, you could write on some white-collar crime issue. Criminal Law Society, I've been involved with as their faculty advisor, they have good sessions from time to time where they bring in practicing lawyers, prosecution or defense, and they talk about what it's like to do that particular criminal law job on a day-to-day basis. But besides that, no. Not everything in your life in law school has to be devoted to criminal law. Do things that you find fun. Law students don't have fun, especially one else don't have fun. or what passes for fun for law students isn't even remotely fun for real people. So I'd say, no, there's none in particular. Just do something you like. But even if you're not a member of the Criminal Law Society, go to some of their lunches just to hear the speakers. Other questions?
What's the difference? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Professor Kaur recommended last semester that everyone should take conflict of law, which I noticed you teach this next semester.
Yeah, I teach it. I'm the only one who teaches it. I teach it only once a year, every fall semester. Don't try to get it for next semester, okay, because for the last 5 years it's closed out with 3 L's. But probably the most important thing I can tell you is that there are very few criminal law issues that you see in conflict of laws. Conflict of laws basically is like an advanced civil procedure course. So it's on the bar, but don't take courses just because they're on the bar, because you're all going to take a bar review course anyway. That's all you need for conflict of laws. Unless you're practicing civil law on a day-to-day basis, you really don't need to take the conflict of laws class. Notwithstanding the fact that it's interesting and fun and extremely well taught. But I could see why he'd say that. He was your Civ Pro teacher, so he's basically saying, well, here's an advanced Civ Pro course. But if you're interested in crim law, not so much.
Is there a difference between criminal trial practice and trial advocacy? Or
same thing. Same name. Criminal trial advocacy, I think, used to be called criminal trial practice.
Oh, okay.
So we have criminal trial practice in the fall every year, many sections. Civil trial practice every spring, many sections. And appellate advocacy, which might be crim, might be civil, but it really doesn't matter. You write a brief, you make an oral argument, and that's offered both semesters, and sometimes in the summer. Trial advocacy, criminal or civil, is never offered in the summer. Occasionally, appellate advocacy is.
The trial advocacy program, is that, I get a little confused by, I guess, just the word program. Is there a program, or is it just an offering of classes that are trial advocacy practically?
I feel like turning off the recorder for this, but I won't. We call it a trial advocacy program just as a way of packaging and marketing.
Okay.
To outsiders and to attract students and to compete in the specialty rankings for U.S. News, which the dean says he doesn't count except when it does. Okay, from a student's perspective, what you want to be aware of is not so much the program, but that we have civil trial advocacy, criminal trial advocacy, appellate advocacy, and a lot of moot courts. Now, at some point, I should have said that you might want to consider doing a moot court, getting on the moot court team, and really, if you want to be a litigator, you could even do a civil moot court, but there are some dedicated criminal moot courts that you might want to pursue. And sometimes, depending on how long the briefs are expected to be, sometimes writing an original brief for a moot court program will satisfy the upper class writing. But really important, don't save that till your last semester. Okay. Other questions?
Is the journal really relevant to criminal law?
That's a good question. Is it really? Well, you can broaden it. Is journal really relevant? is journal important to being a good lawyer? Is journal important to getting jobs? Okay. I've got a conflict of interest. I've been the faculty advisor to the American University Law Review for more than half of its life. Do I think journal is important, whether Law Review or other? Yes. Because the single most important thing that lawyers do is write. Not every lawyer is going to get into the courtroom. Most lawyers will not, sir. Most civil lawyers will not get into the courtroom. Every lawyer is going to be doing writing. The more writing you do, whether it's in a seminar, independent research, moot court, appellate advocacy, trial advocacy, or journal, that's important. The more you do, the better it is. Okay. In addition, ultimately I'll answer your question. Because it's such a tight job market, but even when it wasn't, many employers list as a requirement for applying or for getting an interview that you have journal experience. They think it's sort of an objective filter so that, yes, the student has this grade point average, that's nice, and we're looking for that, but the student was also on a journal, so someone else made the decision that this student was good enough to be on a journal. So they use this as a filter, rightly or wrongly, to get jobs. Okay, is it relevant for criminal law? Well, criminal lawyers have to write. You're going to be writing motions all day long. When you're going to be writing appellate briefs when you lose, and prosecutors win more than they lose. But so if they're going to be writing, the defenders are going to be writing the appellate briefs. You're going to be writing the appellee's briefs. So you will be doing writing. However, finally, to answer your question, fewer criminal law employers care about journal experience than civil employment lawyers. Okay? But it seems to me if you can get it, you get it. Yeah, that's an experience. People may not like it while they're doing it, but even senior lawyers, when they distribute their resumes at conferences, and even judges, when you look at a judge's resume online or elsewhere, if they were on a journal, they'll have it down. So it's got an educational value and a good resume bump. Okay. What else? Okay, so let's consider this done. We went from 4 o'clock to 4:51, so we went a minute over. I will be around generally if you have any questions. I know if you're all 1Ls now, you don't even start to pre-register until next Thursday. If you have any questions, send me an email or come on by. I'm generally around.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay, so I was wondering about talk about Dean's Fellowship.
Sure, let's talk about it. If you want to stay, I'll just fill you in on some of the boxes.
I know that you offer, or that you have one for the summer. Is that still available?
Yeah, that's been filled for months.
Is there one for next fall?
No, only because the people I took for the summer are working through next year. But My guess is that most of my colleagues haven't even thought about it yet.
Okay. For fall or for summer?
Probably both.
Okay.
Probably both. Every faculty member gets a Dean's Fellow half time for the summer. Sometimes we get more, but we don't even have to make a request to get one person for 20 hours a week for 10 weeks. So go to your criminal law professor or go to another criminal law professor.
Do you know of anybody in particular that might be looking in the criminal law area?
No, I don't. But we hired a new criminal law professor from DePaul Law School. Her first name is Song, S-O-N-G, Song Richardson,
mm-hmm.
who's going to be teaching criminal law and procedure. She's starting to teach in the fall, but she'll be here in the summer. She will get a Dean's Fellow, and I guarantee you, nobody has applied to her yet.
You think I could email her and ask her
Absolutely.
If she'd be interested in
Absolutely. Definitely. Okay. Who's your criminal law teacher now?
Jones.
Jones. Talk to Jones.
I did. I spoke with her. Her position's already filled as well.
Okay. Well, Richardson, Professor Davis.
Well, she's on sabbatical.
She's on sabbatical this year, but she'll be back in the fall.
Okay.
So she hasn't had first-year students, and therefore probably hasn't gotten any applications yet. Write to her.
Yeah, I'll email her as well and
Absolutely.
Talk to Jones, because Jones and her, I think, are very close, and maybe she knows if she's looking for.
She may, but you've got nothing to lose by writing her.
Yeah.
Her email address is on the website.
Is Song Richardson's email on the website?
Not on ours. You'd have to find it at DePaul Law School in Chicago.
At DePaul Law School. You wouldn't have that in your office or anywhere.
No, but you just go to the website, you just do a Google search, DePaul Law School, click faculty, last name Richardson, Song Richardson.
Okay.
And just write, introduce yourself, and you know, ask her if she'd be willing to consider you.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Good. Sure. Okay. What's coming in here now?
Cross legislation.